We think of love as these giant gestures. It's not one giant gesture, it's thousands of little decisions each day to show love.
Welcome back to The Table, presented by the Broken Image Podcast. This is where John and I sit down, talk about everything in life, sermons, what's happening today. And so I just want to start off, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm really good. Remodeling the house.
There you go. It's a very, not lots going on. No holidays right now.
I love it. I love this time of year. I take that back. It feels like the days are getting a little longer, so I'm not like driving to work in the dark and coming home in the dark.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
That's always nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the only thing coming up is Valentine's Day.
Which is a made up holiday.
Yeah. Sorry, we were talking about that. What is that?
Yeah. I mean, it's an actual, like the Catholics venerated St. Valentine's because he, I want to say it was like One of the emperors was like, you can't perform Christian wedding ceremonies. He's like, you can't tell me what to do. And he performed all these, you know, underground weddings and they killed him for it.
Wow.
So I think it was like so they started venerating him as a saint. Then there was like little cards you would give to people with hearts.
Oh, interesting.
And then Hallmark.
Yeah.
Was like, here's a way that we can force people to buy stupid cards.
And make a lot of money.
And make a lot of money. So they basically invented a holiday. It was a marketing campaign to invent a holiday. And now
that's
we have
crazy.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah. That's crazy. Like, same with similar type of thing. Kellogg's Frosted Mini Wheats. They created the idea. I think it was this cereal company or Frosted, someone that breakfast is the healthiest meal, the most important meal of the day.
Right. Not
it's
true.
Just ad. Just yes. Marketing scheme.
Right.
And it's genius.
It is genius. Like, look at all the milk campaigns, like healthy bones. I'm like, no, that's not true.
It blows my mind away, but hey, it works.
Yeah, marketing. Anyway, sorry, ladies. It's a made up holiday, so we're off the hook.
We don't got to do anything. Just kidding. I will be doing something. Whatever you want to do is fine.
It is. Well, it's kind of sucks because restaurants aren't open. So
Now
I got to be more creative.
Yeah. I was talking to Jenna about it. She's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, what is there to do? And she's like, you could set something up. I'm like, what? What am I supposed to set up?
Hire troubadours to follow you around for the day and sing you songs.
Mariachi band.
Yes.
But just a couple of things want to talk about. Just what have you been kind of learning with your reading, listening to podcasts, studying?
So, yeah, I love podcasting, listening to podcasts. Podcasts have been helpful. I really am enjoying the Scott McKnight podcast.
He's really good.
What's the name of it? Something
I don't know
Kingdom.
What it is.
Anyway, Scott McKnight's podcast is really good. I enjoy Carrie Newhoff. Been nerding out on a podcast called You're Wrong About. And it takes all these like historical moments, and basically the podcast is like how we misinterpret history.
Oh, wow.
And then there's one with Peter Jennings, the guy that won Jeopardy. He's got a podcast called Omnibus. It's just like obscure things that, cause I like learning nerdy things.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that. And anything by John Tyson from Church of the City, New York is really good. So that's podcast books. I've been reading some poetry because I realize I don't enjoy it.
Okay.
But a lot of people do. And I'm like, what's up with poetry? So I found this Christian poet.
Okay.
Really been enjoying his stuff and trying to force myself to engage a different part of my brain that I don't naturally find interesting.
Gotcha.
I'm reading a book called Canoeing the Mountains about leadership in uncharted territories. And then another book called The Church called Tove. It's about creating a goodness culture in your church. And it uses kind of the setup is all the fallout from the Bill Hybels Willow Creek situation, and then basically taking a magnifying glass to that whole thing and examining like when churches do failure wrong and how to create a culture of goodness rather than, you know, badness, I guess.
Right.
But it's pretty fascinating. And fun fact or interesting bit of personal history is when they were looking for a youth pastor a few years back, they asked me to fly out to Chicago, and I mean, I probably wouldn't have gotten the job, but it just theoretically, I could have been at Willow Creek and lived through all the Bill Hybels sadness, which was what that church went through. So, but that's what I'm reading and listening to right now. And oh, for personal devotional, I'm in Deuteronomy and powering my way through Galatians right now. And then obviously studying Romans for the Forge series.
Yeah, the Forge series, yeah.
Which I love Romans.
Such a good book.
Yeah, really is.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, podcast-wise, I listen to like a cultural podcast with it's a couple famous YouTubers sometimes. And I listened to an episode recently where they had an expert on Bitcoin.
Oh, fascinating.
It was very interesting. Yeah. There's so much more behind it than just like, oh, cryptocurrency.
Right.
It was like this, the basis of it being
Michael Vandenberg's involved with that. And he's tried to explain it to me like four times. Yeah, I'm like, it's crazy. So it's made up money. Okay.
Yeah. It's crazy. And like,
still don't understand
how, I couldn't explain it if I tried, but it was very interesting. But I've been listen to Brenna Blaine's podcast whenever it comes out.
Yeah. She's great.
She had one come out on progressive Christianity with a friend of mine that was really, really good.
Hmm.
I was just on hers that just came out like 2 days ago.
Cool.
So there's that. But I haven't been listening to podcasts very much recently. I've been reading a lot more. Reading a book called Finding the Right Hills to Die On. Talks about like what theological issues should you divide over.
Sounds timely.
It breaks down it way better, like what issues better than like primary, secondary, tertiary. It breaks it down like essential, important, unimportant, and like not like then like kind of meh, like doesn't matter basically. Right. So it's breaking those down. It talks about the first two chapters are like the two far opposite spectrums. Like one's like where people divide on everything. Typically like the Reformed community, like everything's a primary issue. And then like, talked about theological minimalism, like just love Jesus, it's fine.
That's it, yeah. It's interesting. Oh, can I borrow that when you're done?
Yeah, whenever. I mean, I have a PDF too if you want to copy that. But
I like physical books.
Oh, there you go. But yeah, whenever I'm done, I'll send it to you.
Jen got me like a e-reader thing for Christmas. I haven't opened it yet.
Yeah.
So maybe you got to help me get on that.
I like it with an iPad, just because it's like holding a book. But other than that, I my phone can't do it.
Yeah.
But then I'm reading a book by Carrie Newhoff.
I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I didn't. So that's pretty good so far. But
cool.
Yeah.
Burn on books. Books are good, people. Read a book.
Read books.
Yeah. Shut your Netflix subscription out and read a book.
Or watch a documentary if you're going to watch
something. Yeah, if you're going to redeem your time.
Learn something.
Learned people.
But yeah, my personal devotional time is like going through Romans right now.
Sweet.
And then John. I've been falling asleep to the book of John.
Hey.
I fall asleep, so, because Dwell, the app I have.
I got to get Dwell.
Rob got us, interns, a lifetime subscription.
Huh.
And so, like, I have it forever.
So you can pick, like, Samuel Jackson reading the Gospel of John to you.
I wish. Right now I got what's his name? I don't remember his name, but it's like ambient music in the background with this African voice.
Benedict Cumberbunk.
It's so good.
No. Oh, he's an African guy.
He's an African guy. So he's got this like this
sweet accent
and like I set a timer for like 15 minutes so it turns off by the time I'm asleep. But
accents are so crazy. You only hear a fun fact.
Yeah.
So when they train news broadcasters, national syndicated ones, they have them study the dialect and accents from the Northwest because of all the regions in the country, we are less accent driven.
Wow.
So we don't really have, there's not a Northwest accent, but almost every part of the country has an accent.
Huh.
One of my good friend, he's become a really good friend. He's Australian and he could literally read out of the phone book and I would be like enthralled for hours.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. He's like, well, we love American accents. I'm like,
what accent?
Yeah, I don't think of that this is an accent, but
yeah, accents are great.
I was talking with a Chinese friend because, you know, we like Chinese accents. We'll pretend, and it's now not very socially or culturally sensitive, but you know, they like make fun. It's never been, but make fun of like a Chinese accent,
right?
But they said they make fun of English accents.
That's so funny.
And they said they go, because there's so many S consonants in our language, they'll pretend like we're snakes and be like, howdy, cowboy.
That's so funny.
To impersonate an American. And I'm like, that's funny. We do something like that, but I'm not going to repeat what we do. But to make fun of Chinese accents. So
that's funny.
I think that's all that stuff's super fascinating.
Yeah, that is pretty fascinating. Yesterday, last Sunday, we continued our Ford series. We kind of jumped from Romans 8, which you started in, and then we went to Romans 12 to kind of finish the rest of your sermon.
And right.
We talked about loving selflessly, not selfishly.
I know it's hard.
I typed it in my notes, in my title. It was like, love selfishly. And I went back, I was like, that's not right. But yeah, you talked about this idea of loving selflessly. And so in your sermon, you talked about the moralistic gospel, mm-hmm. Which is this idea of doing good, or like, I have to do this awesome thing to like receive the love of God.
Right.
Basically. And then you mentioned with that is that when you fail, when you sin, which we all do, there's this self-condemnation. Like,
right.
There's a difference between like just understanding you're a sinful person and then like dwelling on this fact and being mm-hmm. like, I am so awful.
Yeah, being contrite, repentant.
Yeah. And so this self-condemnation that we have, how is this whole thing different than like the actual gospel?
Right. Yeah. So I mentioned moralism. And the why behind that was I wanted to set up Romans 8 because it's all about God's love for us. If you don't love people in light of or motivated by, empowered by the fact that God has loved you, you're just engaging in moralism, and it makes you a terrible person. Yeah. You might morally be a better person, but you're also a proud person. Typically, when you love in that way, you do it for your own benefit. Like, what do I get out of it, or how do people view me? It's all about image management. Mm-hmm. And that can creep into the church. And a lot of sermons, I catch myself doing this, because it's easier to preach just
a moralistic gospel.
Yeah, a moralistic gospel or a moral message. Mm-hmm. Like the verse says, do this, so do this, and then God will find you approved.
Right.
Instead of going, well, no, why? But the why? Like, mm-hmm. why do this? And, you know, the why, according to Romans, is because God has loved you.
Right.
And in light of that, because God has, and he has approved you and
he's designed
a plan for your life. Now mm-hmm. go live in light of that plan, live right. into your identity. mm-hmm. That's a totally different thrust. To your point about self-condemnation, it's kind of like you're double damned. Mm-hmm. If you're living a moralistic life and you fail, which you will.
Right.
Self-condemnation is equally destructive because you know, he has made us righteous.
Mm-hmm.
When God sees us, he sees his son Jesus.
Right.
And you know, keeping that in mind when you fail, because self-condemnation is looking inward.
Mm-hmm.
We think of it as like true humility, like,
yeah, like,
but,
oh, I'm
but
so
it's not helpful. It doesn't get you closer to Jesus.
No, not at all.
In some ways, I believe the enemy, Satan, loves to use that as a weapon against the saints.
Right.
To keep them entangled in their sin. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah. I mean, to your first point, we like, it creeps into the church, the moralistic gospel, because I heard a pastor talking about the moment he realized that he was preaching moralistically, and he was preaching out of Matthew 5 on the Beatitudes about sex.
Mm.
And his sermon title was 12 Steps to a Sexually Pure Life.
Mm.
And he was like, that's not what this says.
No.
Jesus doesn't go, here's your 10 steps.
The formula, yeah.
Here's the formula to be sexually pure.
Yeah.
And Jackie Hill Perry commented on it because it was a part of a documentary. And she said something super fascinating, that when you preach a moralistic gospel, you give them something that they cannot attain.
Right.
And therefore, out of that comes, like you said, the self-condemnation.
Or like, forget this. And we see this in the church with a lot that of church too. Kids, where they're like, I fail. Yeah, like go off to college and they fail.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, they chuck the whole thing.
Because like, well, I can't attain. I can't
yeah, I've already
make
screwed
it to this
up.
Level.
Or, if, you know, they engage in premarital sex and it's like, well, I guess that's over and now I'm ruined for life.
Now I might as well keep
going down this road.
Right.
they've missed the gospel
completely, because they missed the fact that what Jesus's work did was to give you obviously forgiveness of sins, like the right. clean slate. But then the way God sees you is, like you said, as Jesus, like this imputed righteousness.
Yeah.
Which obviously is so, so important to the gospel.
Right.
Versus that moralistic aspect. You mentioned doubt. And this is a question that I've always wrestled with. A lot of people have talked about. I guess it's kind of like three parts to this question. But is doubt a sin? Is it helpful? And is it common?
Yes. No. No, then yes.
No, then yes.
I don't believe it's a sin.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned the quote by Alistair McGrath.
Mm-hmm.
He's an Oxford trained, got 3 doctorates.
Smart man.
Smart guy. Every decision we make, not strictly based on pure logic, is a faith doubt exercise.
Mm.
There's always, whether you're going to be an atheist or a Marxist or a Christian,
mm-hmm.
there's always a faith proposition you have to step into,
mm-hmm.
because there's never 100% certainty.
Right.
You know, I think about when Jesus interacts with Doubting Thomas. We call him Doubting Thomas.
Right.
I don't think he says, "Thomas, you sinner," you know?
Right, yeah.
He says, "Here, put your hand here, you know, see and now believe.
Come see, yeah.
Blessed are those who believe without seeing."
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe doubt is a sin.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's helpful.
Right.
Because it forces you to and disciplines you to search out the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But to think that all your study will bring you to a place where 100% of doubt is assuaged.
Right.
I don't think it's possible. That being said, there are things I doubted as a new Christian that I no longer doubt.
Right.
But to think that you can permanently and indefinitely eliminate doubt from your life, I think is impossible.
Yeah.
This side of heaven.
Yes.
I think one day we'll, you know, like as he says, as Paul says, you know, we see now as though through glass dimly.
Right.
But one day we'll see face to face.
Right.
And so we will, the other side of eternity, have all our questions answered, but this side of eternity, I think there's always going to be doubt.
Right. How do you then, like, seem like the commands of Paul, like, do not be anxious about anything.
Right.
He talks about, like, do not worry. Like, Jesus says, like, do not worry. Like, when he's talking about the birds, and he's like, your Father will provide. Like, how does that
reconcile those two things?
Yeah, those two things.
Yeah. I don't know that doubt has to be something that produces so much anxiety.
Okay.
I think when I was a new Christian, like, when doubt would sneak in or there would be things I would be wrestling through, I would feel shameful about it.
Mm.
Like, and afraid and scared. And, but now I see it as an opportunity for growth,
right,
and discovery, and it produces less anxiety in me.
Right.
I think just if you find yourself in a season of doubt, you know, mm-hmm. like, don't use that as an excuse to opt out of faith.
Right.
But use it as an opportunity to discover.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, got a friend I'm reading a book with, because he's got some serious doubts about certain aspects of faith, and when you pivot and begin to study and read and discover and have conversations, that's how it can be used helpfully.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to dig in more on this, there's a book by Alistair McGrath, and I think it's called The Power of Doubt.
Mm.
But he does a deep dive into how doubt in his own life has been helpful.
Okay.
And discoveries he's made about doubt. But
yeah.
I think I reconcile those two things by saying I don't think doubt has to be destructive.
Right.
I think it can be a positive thing.
Because it leads you to search. Like,
yeah,
you said.
Search. And for me, in some areas, it's led me to certainty.
Right.
Like, I no longer doubt those things.
Right.
Because I wrestled through them.
Certain of them now.
Yeah.
Which is my experience too, because there's things I've doubted. Not so much like, I would say, like, the divinity of Jesus, or like bigger things I haven't doubted, but I've doubted certain things. I'm like, how is this how does God work like that? Like, I don't know if I like this
right
aspect.
Well, and you don't like the feeling.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh. But, and I mentioned this in a young adult message. It's like, it's not a house of cards.
Right.
I think some people treat their faith like that. It's this house of cards. You pull one card out, the whole house
falls.
Your faith shouldn't be like that.
Right.
And there are cards you can pull out, but because the substructure, the superstructure of who Jesus is undergirds this house,
mm-hmm.
we have a solid foundation.
Right.
So when you pull out certain, you know, the analogy is kind of breaking down, but when you pull out cards and mm-hmm. examine them, it doesn't have to ruin your faith.
Right.
So, it's not like this chain reaction. I think sometimes people treat their faith that way.
Right.
It's like, well, if I doubt this one thing minor that's kind thing, of minor yeah. minutia of Christianity, then I have to scrap the whole thing. And I think that's an not helpful way of looking at your faith.
Yeah. And the last thing about doubt is advice I got from Jeremiah Lyons, actually. He said, it wasn't because we were just talking about doubt and to our small group. And he said, if you're going to doubt out loud. Mm,
which that's good.
I was like, dang, because it's true. If you're going to doubt something about Christianity, tell somebody your doubts and tell Jesus your doubts.
Right, right. Well, and then it's like 9 times out of 10, you'll discover like there are other people wrestling with mm-hmm. the same question.
Right.
It's like, oh, you too? Okay, interesting. Well, let's do this together. Let's
talk about this.
Yeah.
So super helpful. You said that in order to love like Jesus, you have to understand and accept basically the love of Jesus.
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, we kind of treaded this that. Already, but, otherwise you get the cart before the horse and the life of Jesus is impossible without the power of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It's laborious.
Mm.
It's not fun. Yeah. You know, it's all the drudgery without any of the relationship.
Right.
And I've been thinking about this a lot with my own kids. Like, I know there'll be times I need to reinforce correct behavior
mm-hmm.
and it's going to feel like rules.
Right.
But I want my relationship with them to be the thing that drives their willingness to engage in correct behavior and right. know that I'm a good father and I love them and I wouldn't ask them to do anything that wouldn't be for their good and, right. and flourishing. And
mm-hmm.
I think in the same way with Jesus, like when you understand his father's heart for you, then in light of that, you want to live a certain way.
Right.
You want to be conformed to his image.
Right.
But without that undergirding love, driving, empowering, yeah. you know, it's the engine for that. It's, mm-hmm. you end up creating little hypocrites.
Right.
Little Pharisees.
Right.
And I don't want that for my family. I don't want that for my kids. I don't want that for the church.
Right, yeah.
So we have to ground our action in this identity of who we are as Christ's
right, like
sons and daughters.
First John, we love because he first loved us. Yeah. It's like the fuel.
Yeah.
It drives everything
that
we do. Speaking of that, like what, through the power, through the love of Jesus, we love people. How do we love people? What are some, you mentioned some ways, obviously.
Yeah, read Romans 12.
Talks about it.
but a few things that stood out for me in my study is hospitality.
Hmm.
I mentioned last night that book by Rosaria Butterfield, The Gospel Comes with a House Key.
So good.
Yeah, but just practicing hospitality. We think of love as these giant gestures.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one giant gesture. It's thousands of little decisions each day.
Right.
To show love.
Mm-hmm.
And so hospitality is one of those things. I mentioned going the extra mile.
Right. That every time you give a little history lesson, everything started with Christians, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like St. Patrick's Day, Valentine's Day.
Right, right.
Like obviously Christmas, but like that St. Nicholas. Christmas?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like St. Nick.
Yeah.
All these different things. I'm like, they all started with some Christians.
Right. Dude. Well, I even looked at the English language like, thousands of phrases and words find their root in the Old King James Bible.
That's crazy.
So it's like our very language is undergirded by Christian, the Bible, you know? So that's a fun rabbit hole to go down to. It's like how many words, English words are biblical words.
Right.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, going the extra mile, that's a Christian thing. And I mentioned the history behind it. A Roman soldier could force you basically into conscription to carry mm-hmm. their baggage up to 1 mile. And then after that, you were free to go. But Christians, they would carry it the extra mile. They would go 2 or 3, 4 miles. And every step after that last mile
mm-hmm.
is a testimony to something.
Right. Like what is it?
What point are you trying to make by carrying my bags? You know, and then it would lead to conversations and,
mm-hmm.
and, that's how Christians in Christianity went global. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned that. I mentioned hotels, like
the Roman
Christians.
Hotel.
Yeah. Christians started the hotel network. For a small fee, you could stay in someone's home and they would care for you because it was super dangerous to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout the Roman Empire, these little, lack of better words, hotels and motels popped up, churches opening their doors. So what's the modern day equivalent to that? You know, hospitality, neighbor care.
Right.
Having
dinner with somebody.
Having dinner, opening your door, living life in front of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are ways that I think we can show love just off the top that stood out to me from my study.
You kind of briefly mentioned as well, like your gifts, your gifting.
Right.
I think that's another one that people need like to realize that like your whatever gift can love people.
Right. I mentioned one of our young ladies at our campus is gifted in photography and she's like, hey, is this crazy? I'm thinking about in the future. When a young person who's a senior in high school needs free, you know, senior photographs, I'd love to bless someone with that, or family photos for families in need. And I'm like, that's a perfect picture of using your natural gifts and talents to bless people around you.
Right.
And when churches really come alive, it's when people begin to realize that and go, you know, We have such a narrow definition of what it means to serve the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, well, John serves the Lord because he's a pastor, but I don't serve the Lord because I'm a mechanic.
Right.
I'm like, no, you serve the Lord too.
You know, exactly.
So figure out ways, and I mentioned this, and I'm always quoting Henry Blackaby because it's such a great quote.
Mm-hmm.
Discover where God's at work and join him in it.
Mm,
so where's God at work, and then what is it about my natural gifting and ability that I can join him with those things because that's how God wired me.
Right.
That's one of the best acts of love you can show.
Yeah, no kidding.
So,
yeah, that's really
so. What's your thing? You know, that's the question. What's your thing? You know, you do concrete, you build houses, you're a cook. So figuring out your natural gifting or passion,
right?
And then trying to discern where God's at work, and then join him with those gifts.
Right. Yeah, it's super helpful to figure out what your gifting is, and it doesn't even have to be, like you said, a spiritual gifting. It
could be a practical gift. Yeah,
like I can. Do this thing.
I'm strangely good at
blank
pet training.
Like I think of Cav.
Yeah. Right?
She makes these leather
goods,
like journals, goods, all these things. She puts little quotes on them and
Bible verses.
I'm like, that's loving people, especially when she's giving people as gifts. And that's definitely loving people like Jesus would.
Yeah.
Today is MLK Day.
Yeah.
Obviously. Big day, especially in regards to everything that's happened this last year, which is crazy. But kind of want to probably talk about his legacy.
Right,
I don't even know how to go about what questions to ask, but just let's just talk about him.
Just talk out loud for a moment.
Yeah.
My son, he's seven, so he's asking questions about MLK and you know, he's a pastor like you, Dad, and like, you know, some similarities in that he's a pastor, but totally different life that he lived. I think the thing that stood out to me the most is we think of it like ancient history.
Right.
And then I'm like, no, I mean, I have relatives who lived under segregation. Like, that's recent history.
Right, yeah, that was that's a long time ago,
you know, like if he were alive today, I think he'd be like 91. He'd be the same age as he and Anne Frank were born in the same year. And we think of the Holocaust and we think of the civil rights struggle as ancient
like
American
a
history.
A long time ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
No, not at all.
Right. So I think that's one thing that stood out to me. And I don't know, it's like two white guys. I don't know how much we have to offer.
Yeah, right.
And we're in one of the most homogenous parts of the country. Like the Northwest is known for being predominantly white. So I don't, it's hard to even have a conversation about race because I don't want to prop myself up as some sort of like expert.
No, I know.
Share stories. I'm like that's not helpful.
No, it's not. We don't have the same life experience as someone that's a person of color.
No, no, I'm
like we have
not a POC.
Our source about obviously it's like people we know, that the stories we hear, but right. then obviously scripture
right.
Is our main source. That's the only really authoritative thing that we have
to say. Yeah.
But
yeah. It's one of those, I'm glad it's a national holiday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad kids have it off school. Yeah, it feels like in light of this year, you know, there's a part of me is like, okay, we've made so much progress, and then things happen, you're like, wow, we still have so much further to go. Right,
well, there's so much that we need to do.
This is, I can't remember if it was like Alexis de Tocqueville. It was a historian basically saying like, this will be the open wound in America when they made the decision to accept slavery. Because initially in American history, that wasn't the way that we were going. You know, like black people were living in America as free men. And it wasn't really until cotton took root as a major trade that we began to chattel slavery began to be enacted. And so anyways, he said this will be the open wound in America for generations.
Yeah.
Because this is, it's baked into the cake.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that we will continue. My hope and prayer is that the church would be a source and place of healing
mm-hmm.
and a picture of what could be.
Right.
Because, you know, there is neither Greek nor Jew,
right.
male nor female. You know, like the gospel, the ground is level at the foot of the cross.
Right.
And so there's a spirit of inclusivity. But as MLK said, you know, the most segregated day of the week is Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
As he talked about churches.
Right.
And so there's this weird dichotomy of, man, the Christian message says this, but our faith communities look like this.
Right.
It's tricky, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, how do you accurately, because obviously like in Revelation, it talks about like every tribe and tongue and nation will right. all be in heaven.
Right.
Like that it'll be the church and the body of Christ will be completely diverse.
Right. And I say this all the time, like the average Christian now is a Nigerian woman. Like you look at the global
mm-hmm.
church is the future. The global Southern church is the future of the church.
That's crazy.
Africa and Asia.
And we think it's like America.
It's not. It's not. We're and so struggling. In the same way that Scotland was the leading sender of missionaries for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Now South Korea sends missionaries to Scotland. Like the church is always on the move, but we would be remiss to think that we're always going to be the center of Christianity. It's always shifting.
Right.
So the future of the church is looking very much like a person of color. When you think like pound for pound, there are more Christians
right.
in China, I think. By next year, they're going to outpace America. And
that's crazy.
And revival. And then Africa is not far behind in India. And
right.
So when we get to heaven, I think we're going to be very surprised in a good way. Like it's a very diverse, every tribe and tongue and nationality
mm-hmm.
Will be represented.
Right.
But yeah, I'm not sure I was going with that train of thought.
Yeah, but yeah, MLK, he left. Something that a friend of ours posted on his story was like he posted some MLK quotes, and those are the quotes that like are typically used. Those are the easy ones. Like,
right.
Ooh, we don't like racism. That's bad.
Right.
And everybody likes them.
Right.
Then he also posted some other ones that would.
Harder quotes.
They're harder quotes that would, and we don't have them right now, but they would challenge right. a lot more specifically white people's
right.
thought.
Right.
And beliefs about certain things. And,
right.
Right. And it's important to look at those quotes.
Yeah. Well, and Martin Luther King, we venerate him now. I mean, that's the word I'm going to use.
Right.
You may not agree that he's venerated, but he is. And we clean him up. He was a complex human being.
Mm-hmm.
And had lots of thoughts and feelings and ideas.
Right.
And we do. We gravitate towards the nice, packageable ones.
Right.
And avoid some of his other ideas that we find more challenging.
Right.
And so I guess the action item would be, you know, like, read those too.
Right.
And put those to thought.
Don't you know? Just create your own version of Martin Luther King.
Yeah, curate that version.
Figure out who he is and like what he actually believed. Because obviously a lot of what he believed was amazing things, but there could have been things that you disagreed with.
He's a human being.
He's a human being. He's a fallible person.
Right. He is not Jesus.
Yeah.
But he did a ton for our brothers and sisters of color, and mm-hmm. we're thankful for his legacy.
Right.
And we, as a fellow faith leader, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot we can learn from him and emulate right. As we pastor and lead people to more Christ-likeness. But yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. But that's all the time we have today. Quickly, if you don't know and you're listening, on the Instagram, it's BRKN, then images. We're doing a giveaway. We're giving away two books and a journal from a graphic designer, self-proclaimed theologian. He's got a really cool journal. And then a book that I mentioned, that Finding the Right Hills to Die On, and then a book called The Imperfect Disciple, Grace for People That Can't Get Their Act Together. And so you can go enter in on Instagram. The rules are there if you want to win some books and a journal. So
awesome.
Like we said, reading's good.
Yeah, we want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Michael Williams.
Yes,
he is. Thank you, Michael. If you hear clicking noises in the background, that's him on the keyboard. He is also the resident apple slicer. Yeah. So way to slice those apples, Michael.
Yeah, he also has a YouTube channel.
He does.
We Are More. Go check it out.
It's a YouTube channel, and I think he has an Etsy page and a LinkedIn account. And
follow him on Instagram.
Some, like a Tamagotchi. I think he's got a Tamagotchi. So
he's the best.
He's the best.
He's our sponsor. Since no one else will sponsor us.
The bearded handsome man.
Yeah. Well, that's all we have time for today. See you guys next time.